We're going to talk with a guest who knows how starting a new business can quickly become all-encompassing, and who will tell us entrepreneurs learn to love being in over their heads. We will hear his story, including what he calls his smoothie moment. Wait till you hear about that, and see if you can relate. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, May 27th. Have you ever started a business? Did it consume your life? Why did you decide to become your own boss and not leave that to someone else? How lean were your lean years? And are you still a little over your head? If you are thinking of starting up your own startup, what questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Thomas Goetz. He was a lead editor at Wired before he co-founded the digital health startup Iodine. He's the CEO of Iodine and a columnist for Inc. magazine, where he wrote the essay, Learning to Love Being In Over Your Head. He's also the author of the new book, The Remedy. He joins us bright and really early from California. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. My pleasure.
Well, your book, The Remedy, doesn't have a lot to do with starting up your own business. What is it about?
The book is about the germ theory of disease and the quest to cure tuberculosis in the 19th century with a guest appearance by Sherlock Holmes. So it's a little afield from my day job, but that's what made it fun to write.
Well, it's also what you can do, I guess, when you're your own boss, huh?
Exactly. That was very much the case.
Well, first off, why did you decide to leave Wired and start Iodine?
Right. So I was I actually grew up in the Midwest. Grew up in Minneapolis. My father was from Fond du Lac, so I have to make that shout out. Made my way out to California and was spent many years at Wired observing kind of the impact of technology on so many industries, really, and focused myself on healthcare and was a science writer. But what I realized was that there was actually the opportunity to start, you know, get my hands dirty and to make a kind of company that what Iodine does is we're basically making better decision tools for consumers to make medical decisions around their health. So the impetus was really something that is driving a lot of entrepreneurs these days, which is that basically the barriers to entry are so low in the digital world. The access to the tools, the access to the marketplace, and the access to potential customers is so immediate that for me it just became a question of why not give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And it was smooth sailing right from the start, right?
Well, we're still... So the fun thing about the column and the fun thing about where we are is it's still early days. So what we're doing is it's been about a year since we started the company and we are kind of on the proverbial path of any startup company. We are we've gotten some funding from venture capitalists and some angel investors, which include friends and family, and just people that we talked to and thought it was a good idea, and so now we're kind of on this simultaneous path of trying to hire people to start building our product, and also just test what we have and make sure that we have a product that is going to appeal to people when we finally have it ready. So it's this balance, this kind of dance that a lot of startup companies are doing. Obviously, we're in Silicon Valley in San Francisco, so it's something that is sort of in the water here. But I know a lot of people, all over the country, are trying to start start new companies and are going on this kind of entrepreneurial bid to make something happen. And I think the access to the tools that are necessary are so immediate that there's for many people there's no reason not to give it a shot.
So you have some investors from Fondi?
No, we have various investors. Some of them are from established companies like Yelp or Google, things like that. But others of them are just friends who, when we were talking to them, they said, you know, this is a great idea. We'd like to put some money in. And we even turned some people down, which is an important thing when you're starting a business, to know who not to take money from as well as who to take money from.
Well, in your essay, Learning to Love Being in Over Your Head, which caught our attention, you wrote about your smoothie moment. You
Yeah.
purchased a smoothie, and it made you realize how committed you were in your company.
Right. Well, I should say I tried to purchase a smoothie. So this was a couple months ago when my co-founder Matt and I were on our way down to meet with some venture capitalists, doing the kind of dance the race that a lot of people do from San Francisco down to the Palo Alto area where a lot of the venture capital firms are based. So we were headed down there, and I stopped in at a smoothie shop around the corner from our office. Only to learn that I had no cash on me, so I couldn't buy it with cash. So I offered one credit card after another, all of which were denied, and finally realized that I was totally tapped out. That the months that Matt and I had spent basically cooking up iodine had depleted my bank account to the point where I had nothing left. So it was a true kind of religious moment for me. I realized that I was absolutely committed, even more than I had recognized, to this new company.
Well, that had to be kind of terrifying, though, too.
It was a realization that that basically several months of hard work had basically created a commitment that I hadn't ever said. I'm gonna go all in on this. I'm gonna put everything I have on the line and start this company. I knew I was committed, but I didn't know quite that. That was never a conscious decision. And so when you kind of reach the realization that indeed you have made that commitment, it's a profound realization.
Yeah. I mean, so that smoothie was worth more than $6.99.
Well, yeah, and I should say, it wasn't entirely the end. I went home and I talked to my wife, and we had some savings that we were able to kind of liquidate and kind of put back in our bank account. So it wasn't the kind of end of the line for us. And as I said, we did manage to go ahead and get some investment that was that made it possible for us to start funding the company, not out of our own pockets. But this is the path that a lot of people have to take, and in fact, it's probably a wise one for many people to use your own resources and your own savings to see if there's an idea there before you start bringing on investors and kind of having to manage what is really a distraction of managing investors as well as managing the business. And investors are wonderful. We have wonderful investors at Iodine, but the fact is that they have demands. They want their investment to turn into, it's not a gift. They quite reasonably want to see some return on their investment. So you need to make sure that the idea that you're going after is one that has not only sounds good, but actually has the makings of a real company and real revenue down the line. And so to get to that stage, to kind of work your way to that stage oftentimes requires you putting your own resources on the line first.
Yeah. And there's been quite a bit of reaction to your essay. I understand that a lot of other entrepreneurs are sharing online their own smoothie moments.
Yeah. Well, so that was one of the fun things about deciding to write this column for Inc. was really to share my story, warts and all, and every month I'm kind of uncorking a new installment in the realizations and the learnings. But yeah, one of the fun things about this column was it really seemed to strike a nerve. It seemed to be a hidden truth among entrepreneurs, that a lot of people are are in fact in over their heads. You know, a lot of people when they start a business, and I don't think there's anybody who starts a business and actually has a full kind of knowledge of what's going to happen. Our expectations are often not realized and are often kind of outmatched by the reality. And so I think one of the fascinating things is having heard from so many people who have similarly kind of put it all on the line and you know, for good and for bad. The reality is that many, if not most, new businesses will fail. And so that's kind of a reality that everybody is up against, and everybody is trying to basically fight the odds.
We are talking about starting up your own startup, talking about being in over your head. You just heard our guest talk about his smoothie moment when he realized that he had put it all in and didn't have enough cash on hand or assets on hand to buy a $7 smoothie. Have you had a smoothie moment? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 21 minutes past 6 o'clock. We are talking about what it takes to start your own business and wondering if you want to share any questions or experiences that you've had. We're talking with a guest who gave it his all and is in the process of starting up his own startup, Iodine. He is the co-founder and CEO of Iodine, a digital health startup. He's also a columnist for Inc. magazine. And Thomas Goetz wrote an article titled Learning to Love Being In Over Your Head, which prompts our discussion this morning. And we are, again, welcoming your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, we've got lots of early birds joining us. Christopher in Madison is with us first. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. Do you have a smoothie moment?
I do. I started a business about 8 or 10 years ago. I've moved on from it since then, but the first couple of years were very lean, as they are for most entrepreneurs. But mine came actually probably 4 or 5 years after I started the business, and it was a question of whether or not I wanted to scale up and take the business larger or move on, and that was my sort of quandary. And my smoothie moment came before it actually happened, which was not only would I have to put all of my resources on the line to scale the business up, but I was also going to have to put the resources of my wife and my house and a lot of other things on the line. And at that point, I decided it was too much of a risk and went another direction. So I think those are important considerations as well.
Thomas?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. The question of how much to grow a business, I think, is a very material one. And really, it goes to this question of how large do you want to get and how large can the company get? It's one that I think a lot of people face when they start a company and realize that, you know, there are always this balance between risk and reward. And sometimes, actually, there's a sweet spot where we don't have to grow the business anymore, but can still kind of make enough money to kind of keep ourselves well-fed and well-housed and happy, and that's enough. And that's a very important moment to realize when you're there and that when your business is there at the scale that you can manage individually.
Yeah. Is there a moment when you have to decide, am I cut out for doing this on my own, starting up my own business? You wrote about how, you know, you wrote about startups, but that didn't mean that you were necessarily, you know, completely versed in how to do it yourself.
Yeah. The line I had in the story was, just because you read the biography of Steve Jobs doesn't mean you're Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And I think it's very true. You know, it's hard to start a company. But on the other hand, one of the points I'd like to make is. Is that, you know, there's a certain mythology around starting a business that entrepreneurs are this kind of special kind of person, And I think a lot of that is kind of unnecessary swagger. There are a lot of people who are self-employed, and they basically are running their own businesses, right? They're freelancers, or they have a small business that they do out of their home, and that's hard work, and that's something that people face up to those challenges, and they manage it, and they have their QuickBooks at home, and they make it work. And then there are people who have a small business in the sense of a printing store or a restaurant or what have you, and there are real challenges to those enterprises as well. I'm off in this scale of doing a startup, kind of a technology company where the expectation is that we grow and grow and grow, and that kind of is the deal that we made with our investors, that we are committed to growing as large as we can, as fast as we can. But there are many different flavors of running your own business, and I have great respect for anybody who sets upon one of these courses.
Let's take another call from Grace in New Glarus. Hello, Grace.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, how are you?
Well, we just had a coffee disaster.
Oh, I'm sorry. Especially because it dealt with coffee. Oh, no.
Oh, no. For the first place, we didn't have any caffeinated beans, and then and the coffee makers decided to overflow. It's not working properly.
Bad timing.
So what I would like to say is that there are a lot of resources out there for folks who are thinking about starting a business. We were really lucky. We got hooked up with the Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Center about 4 years ago, and I need that.
It sounds like that coffee pot is ready to explode there. But anyway, Grace, so
Four years ago, and the Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Center offers all sorts of training in startups. They have classes on how to write a business plan, which include how to research your ideas, how to do your financials, whether or not this is going to fly, how much you need to invest, how much you need to bring in a month to keep it going, ongoing assistance once you get up and going, and they do offer loan programs. The Small Business Administration provides a majority of their funding, but they have a lot of other funds coming in. And there are also small business development centers at most universities, and those can be really phenomenal. Some of them, programs can be kind of expensive, but they often have grant programs, and in some cases, like University of Wisconsin has the Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic, and you can go in and get assistance. They'll draft your operating agreements, and they'll help you with all of your legal issues.
That's excellent, Grace. Did you start up your own business using these resources, or do you help other people do start up their own businesses?
It's kind of funny. I was already working for a candle-making supply company, and in that I was teaching people how to make candles via the phone and email and drafting documents with my mentor, Lachelle Birch of Karner Blue in Madison. And when my husband retired, he's like, well, what are we going to do? Well, why not start a candle-making business? And so whereas I've been having experience helping other people get going, that's one of Candle Cocoon, the online supply business, is not just to sell supplies. It's also to help people who want to get going in a business and help them grow their business.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad, and I'm assuming it's working out okay.
Well, so we started our own business called Paranga Candles last year, and it's work. I mean, I've been down working on candles already this morning, and but you know, it's really fun to go to the bank with those checks and deposit them, and it's really fun to see repeat customers come back, or you take product someplace and people just go, wow, these are awesome.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm happy that that it worked out, and I wish you good luck on the coffee. Thomas, what about that? How can you have to ask for help, or should entrepreneurs know when to ask for help?
Well, actually, that's a great point. There's sometimes the presumption that you should already have all the answers, and that's not at all the case. And the resources that the caller mentioned are all really great ones. And I know that we have used the Small Business Administration in particular for some help in just, you know, basically the getting the basic kind of pillars of the business built. But another thing that she mentioned in passing was this idea of a mentor. And I think that is an exceptionally good idea. You know, there are a lot of people who if you can find kind of one person to bounce ideas off and one person to kind of have some feedback and just to ask, what did you do in this situation? What did you do when you had this problem? Those kind of mentors are really invaluable in just navigating the kind of waters of a new business, no matter what the field is or what kind of business it is.
We are talking about starting your own business with a guest who started up a startup, the CEO of Iodine, a digital health startup, Thomas Goetz. And we're welcoming your questions for him, and we're welcoming your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about what it takes to start up a startup with someone who has and is writing about his experiences in Inc. magazine and welcoming your questions and experiences. Have you ever thought of starting up your own business? Have you become your own boss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Thomas Goetz. He is the co-founder and CEO of Iodine, a digital health startup, and is a columnist for Inc. magazine, where he wrote the recent piece, Learning to Love Being In Over Your Head. And we are talking about what it takes and what it's like being your own boss and starting your own business. Now, you did write about this smoothie moment, Thomas, that we have been discussing a little bit, where you realized that you were in over your head when you couldn't afford to buy a $7 smoothie. But you also had some other moments that had an impact on you.
Yeah, so there are all sorts of these kind of signal moments, I think, that an entrepreneur goes through where they realize, okay, we're taking it to a new level here. We're committing on a new way, to a new way. And some of them are very simple. You know, hiring your first employee, I think, is a very real shift when you all of a sudden you decide that, you know, you're going to put not only your own kind of career on the line, but you're going to bring somebody in who and promise to them that, you know, there's a good chance of this company working out, and you're going to make that commitment to them, but you're also going to, you know, commit to paying them a paycheck every 2 weeks. So that's a big deal. And, you know, signing a lease on your office, that's a really firm commitment. When, you know, it was very interesting for us where I had a long career as a journalist. I kind of have a profile in my industry, and so when we sat down to actually make the agreement with our landlord, she was asking very reasonable questions about how we're going to be able to make the rent payments every month, and I had this presumption that, well, of course I can make the rent payments. I've followed through with everything I've ever done in my career, but her questions were actually quite reasonable. You know, how am I going to come up with that $4,000 every month to pay for the office? Office space is very expensive in San Francisco, so yeah, it was an expensive payment every month.
Yeah, everything is expensive in San Francisco.
Yes.
Let's go to Bill and Hurley next. Hello, Bill.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say that I actually have a caretaking landscaping moment actually right now as we speak. It's kind of a point of you're like the Vikings, you burn the ship, kind of getting started, borrowing your father's money and having your mother's love as support, and you just kind of made the point that you just, it's something you you want to do. You get tired of working for different people, and you just decide to take a chance, but it's just kind of like a leap of faith, and you have to just go for it, and sometimes there's like a higher power that's kind of guiding you, and it's like sticking with the winners, and like they say, some people dream of becoming successful while others work hard at doing it.
Wonderful. So you're doing this right now, Bill? Right this moment, you're starting up this landscape company?
Yeah. Last night, it was all I could do to come up with enough money for a dinner and a soda, and I have enough to start. But I have a very supporting private families that I do work for, and it's the wheels are turning.
Well, gosh! So he had a dinner and soda moment last night, Thomas.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. I mean, I really applaud the courage it takes. It's rather daunting to make that as he said, the leap, not only a leap of faith, but it is like the Vikings, and you arrive on the other shore and you burn the boat, so you won't have any. There's no going back. And it does feel that way sometimes, and I think that's part of what is so invigorating about starting a business is you really feel like, you know, you're challenging yourself on a new level, and on a level that, you know, when you don't have, I think one of the things that has been quite striking to me is when you work for a company and you have a job at a company, there's the company takes care of a lot of stuff, right? The company yeah. takes care of your desk. The company takes care of the power. The company takes care of buying your computer or the company car, or all these kind of the accoutrements, the kind of environment in which you work every day, that's all taken care of. And so when it's up to you, when you start a business, all that stuff is up to you. Everything is up to you. You know, buying the pencils is up to you. And that is, in some sense, one of the biggest realizations is just how much you have to do that is completely aside from the fact of whatever the business is that you've started up, but just all of the other stuff, just coming up with all the other stuff that makes for a kind of working company, you have to do that too.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I'm going to share that my husband is retiring on Friday this week.
Oh, my goodness.
And he is going to do some yoga teaching. He's just going to, you know, a little bit here and there. I tried to talk him into... not half-heartedly tried to talk him into opening his own yoga studio and tea shop and make it a cat cafe like the cat cafe that opened recently in San Francisco. Are you familiar with
that? Yeah.
He won't do it.
So saying no is a good idea too sometimes.
Well, that's and that's what I was going to kind of get into. He's been working all of his adult life, and while he still wants to continue to work teaching an occasional yoga class, starting up his own yoga business was way too much in terms of everything that he'd be responsible for. And maybe some people aren't really suited to opening their own business.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that's something that as we just said, having the courage to say, you know, that's probably not what I want to do. It's an important decision to make before you get kind of committed and before the ship has sailed. And I think that's one of the challenges is just, you know, working out whether it's really something you want to undertake and working out whether it is something that is that you're up for. Unfortunately, it's not cut and dried for a lot of people. It's something that you have to try to figure out whether it is for you or not.
Yeah, there was another writer who used your piece on, you know, learning to live over your head to write another piece on why you shouldn't quit your day job. Did you happen to see that?
Yes, that was I thought that was funny because it was, it was exactly the opposite, the opposite point I was trying to make, but a very valid one, which is that, you know, especially in the technology field, but you know, there's a kind of vogue for starting up your own company these days. It's cool, it's easy, it's fun, but that doesn't mean everybody should do it. That doesn't mean that it's a good idea, and you know, a lot of people learn that lesson the hard way. I can't say to your listeners, oh, I've gone through the kind of gauntlet and we're in the rosy fields now. You know, we are very much at my company Iodine, we're very much trying to make this transition and trying to establish something that will be a sustainable business. But we don't know yet, and that uncertainty is something we have to live with every day.
We are talking about starting your own business and what it's like, what you can expect, some of the obstacles, some of the successes. We are talking with Thomas Goetz. He is co-founder and CEO of Iodine, which is a digital health startup. He started this up after being an editor at Wired. He is a columnist as well for Inc. magazine. And he wrote an article titled Learning to Love Being In Over Your Head. And we are talking about learning to love that feeling with him and welcoming your questions, welcoming your own experiences of starting up your own business. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So starting your own business, did it consume your life? How did you survive the lean years? Are you still surviving the lean years? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about starting up your own business and welcoming your questions and experiences for our guest, someone who did, Thomas Goetz, the co-founder and CEO of Iodine, a digital health startup. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our next caller is Clarence in Watertown. Hi, Clarence.
Good morning. I have to shut the bobcat off here. We're out in the barn cleaning. I got out of the military and decided we wanted to farm. My brother started with me. My dad co-signed on the note for the farm. And, that startup seems like anybody could do it. But today, these days, it's almost impossible to start up. Unless you have, parental or in-law help. But thinking about the landscaping business and these other businesses, if you have animals, dairy, hogs, whatever, you are working 7 days a week. Yeah. And if you start a business, you got to realize that if you don't do it, no one else will. And, everybody else gets paid first. And the lean years, I remember when things were pretty tight in agriculture, going to the creditors and say, hey, I can only pay you half of what I owe you this month, but I'll we'll catch you up down the road, and you build a trust with your creditors. And they know that, they grumble a little bit, but they know that you will eventually pay up. And if feed costs and your sales of milk or beef or whatever you've got even out, that you will keep going. But mm-hmm. I think I hear a lot of people, or some people say that, I want to own my own business and be my own boss so I can come into work when I want. And, and it is not that way.
Yeah, it's 24/7 and it's hard as heck, Thomas.
I think that's a great point. Let me just say it's 4 in the morning out here in California, so it's very much a 24/7 thing. And I think it never goes away. The job never goes away. The kind of responsibilities never go away. You can't ever turn it off. One other point that the caller just made that I think is worthwhile is, farming it used to be the lifeblood of the nation. Most of the nation was farmers just a few decades ago. And so all those people were running their own businesses. And I think this is again, something that, a lot of people have this in them. It's not really something that is only a special kind of people could do. It's just now we have the kind of opportunity to say, do we want to go that way or not? Do we want to have a job where we kind of work for somebody else and have the kind of security and dependability of a regular paycheck? Or do we want to take on the higher risk of doing it ourselves? And I really think that risk reward trade off is the one that people should be mindful of, because yes, there are potentially big upsides. If you do really well, and you own the business, that all comes to you. But if it all goes south, that's all on you as well.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Clarence. Linda on Facebook writes, started a business in 1997 called Cup of Joy. I love that name. It's a coffee shop. It lasted 2 years, but it was the best idea and the most frustrating at the same time. It was a coffee shop in a town that was not quite ready for a coffee shop. Had many people who enjoyed it, but it was an expensive proposition for us. Well, Thomas, what about that? When should someone know when to pull the plug?
Yeah, well, timing is everything. You know, and certainly in my field, in the technology industry, there are all sorts of great ideas that are just a little too early for their time. You know, great kind of transcendent, world-changing ideas that the world isn't ready for. And that's a very hard thing to get right, that timing. And it's one that we're trying to work, you know, with our own, what we're doing with bringing information to consumers about their health. You know, are they ready for that? Are people ready to take on their own decision making about their health and take a little responsibility away from their doctor? That's something we're checking out and we're testing. We're not sure. And then knowing that, you know, when you gave it a good shot, knowing that it's kind of done and when to move on. That's a very hard thing to judge. I mean, one easy way to judge it is, you know, it goes back to the bank account. Is there money in the bank?
Mm-hmm.
For us, that is a kind of real ticking clock in the background. You know, how much money do you have to basically pay people and try to build something before the money runs out? And that's the way we're able to measure it. But other businesses have different economics, and they don't have that kind of clarity. So it's a very challenging thing, and I think it's something that each business has to get right individually.
Well, now I'm curious to hear a little bit more about Iodine. How are you going to make money? I can look up WebMD to find out stuff about health and stuff. What are you going to do?
Well, so the idea behind Iodine is that, you know, if you go to WebMD and kind of have to hunt your way through WebMD, the idea for Iodine is that you go to Iodine and the information will kind of coalesce around you, which is to say that if we understand a little bit about you, your age, your gender, we'll be able to give you much better information and much better kind of scientific information around what you what may be best for you. So that's the proposition, and we're trying to build that right now. The proof will be, you know, basically on two levels. One is, are we going to be able to, can we get customers? Can we get users to come to iodine.com instead of WebMD? That's a very real question, and you know, that's a very big opponent. But the other question is can we make money at it? And that's a different question altogether. And for us, it's a matter of creating a service that's so good that hospitals or insurers will be willing to pay for it to deliver to their patients and to the people that the people that they cover. So that's how we perceive as our opportunity to make money. But it's an open question.
Yeah. Let's go next to Jay in Cedarburg. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Good morning. My daughter's starting a small business. It's a cup swallower business in Madison, and she's actually been pretty successful at it already. She's got a number of weddings booked and so on and so forth. Something she can do while she keeps her current job. My wife's a little more tentative about it, you know, that she's getting in, you know, with both feet and so on and so forth. But I encourage her because my mantra is, look, you know, do you want to be working for somebody when you're 60 and doing what you're doing when you're 60? You know, so I've been very much encouraging her to do this, and I think it's a good opportunity. I just warned her. I said, don't become, you know, the characters in Animal Farm and become this awful employer, you know, if you are successful.
That's good advice. Do you have any other advice, Thomas?
Well, I think the fact that he's supporting his daughter is wonderful, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, entrepreneurs won't say willingly, but all the support they can get is welcome. And, you know, having a pat on the back and saying, you know, you're doing a good job and it's a good company, that is so important to hear. Because I think, you know, your daughter probably feels like she doesn't have all the answers, and you know, really she doesn't. The answers aren't apparent. And so having that encouragement and support is so valuable. So I really applaud you for being there for her.
Thank you, Jay. Kyle on Facebook says, I tried to start Good Dog Services, a pet sitting service, but with the recession going on, it never got off the launch pad. I mean, maybe not specific advice for getting a pet sitting service off the launch pad, but just in general, when times are tough, how do you get off the launch pad?
Yeah, well, so that's another variable that I think is important to be aware of is those external forces, right? The economy, mm-hmm. What happens to, you know, those things are outside of our control. Everything may look perfect until kind of a recession comes along, and then no matter how great your idea is, it's just kind of one more casualty. And I think it's important to be mindful that those things can happen, right? That it's not all on you. Starting a business, and if that business fails, it might be not because you didn't try hard enough. It might just be because something else was some other variable was in the offing, and that happens. That's going to happen to a lot of people.
Well, we have just a minute or so to go. Do you have any last minute advice for people who are considering their own business, or maybe are in the very early stages of this?
Well, I think the best advice is, you know, if you have a good idea, if you think you have a good idea, be honest to yourself and give it a good shot. You know, that may not be to actually get as far as to starting up the business and opening the storefront or whatever, but it may be just putting your thoughts on paper and showing them to somebody else and going to the Small Business Administration or the local services there in Wisconsin and really seeing if this is an idea that has legs. I think, you know, this is the lifeblood of this country is small businesses. This is how this country was formed is small businesses and people taking risks. And so I think all of your listeners who are itching to try something, they should give it a shot and see if there's something there.
Yeah. So what's your next article going to be?
The next article is about this thing I touched on, which is how, you know, starting a company, you think it's just building the service or the product that you set upon, but it's in fact about all these other things, all the kind of chaos of deciding what computer programs to buy and what kind of silverware you're going to have in the kitchen drawer and stuff like that. It's a lot more than just deciding what product to build.
We will look for it in Inc. magazine. Thanks a lot for being with us, and good luck.
It was my pleasure.
Thomas Goetz is co-founder, CEO of Iodine, a digital health startup. I'm Joy Cardine.